Oh, perfect timing. Okay. Well, as soon as she gets back, then Sheila will introduce our keynote, and we'll start. So if when that happens, you could be quietly finishing your dinner, and I apologize for how long it took to get our dinner. There she is. Yep.
All right. We'll just wait for Joanne so she can hear her introduction. I was just saying, well, I'll just wait for Joanne to come in so she can hear her introduction. Yeah. I don't know how well it would be received in this crowd. Oh, I do actually have a joke that would be well received in this crowd. You know, there's a new restaurant on the moon. New restaurant on the moon. Good food, but there's no atmosphere. No, not really. Actually, the atmosphere is out of this world. And there's a great house band that plays in the bar. No air supply. Aren't you hoping Joanne gets in here pretty soon? Joanne is in the house. Very good. All right. Terrific. Would everybody join me? Let me just tell you a little bit about Joanne. Joanne is very, very active. She's from Michigan. That's my home state. And so I have very sentimental feelings for her anyway. But she's just wonderful on the bridge meeting. And I'll tell you where she got my attention is because, like so many of the people like Karen, who, you know, headed this whole thing up and got it off the ground, and all the wonderful people we have in World Service, you know, there seems to be a core group of people who do the bulk of the work and get the bulk of the blessings, as I always try and tell my sponsees. Whoever's doing the service is getting the goodies. Don't kid yourself. But on the bridge meetings, I noticed that Joanne is one of those people on the bridge meetings who was always doing a lot of service. She would afterwards, you know, they have people who stay on the lines to talk with people, to do newcomers. She was always volunteering to do that, and I just heard her name come up a lot. And then she and I started talking on the phone, and she's been around program for a long time. She has some wonderful years of recovery. You are just in for a treat. Lovely Joanne, and she has it where it counts because she's always doing service. So if you would please join me in welcoming Joanne from Michigan, our opening night speaker. And this is the first time I've ever seen beautiful Joanne. She says,
bless your heart.
Thank you, my love. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name's Joanne. I'm a compulsive eater, just like you. And I was just in the bathroom before I came. You know, I had to get the broccoli out of my teeth. And thanks, Joan. She got the toothpick. She made sure I didn't fall in the hallway. And I made it back. But while I was in there, Holly said, "Now, don't worry, because God never tells you what you need to know until you get right there and you need to know it." And I said, "Well, I hope he does it soon, because I'm getting really, really nervous here." So I come here with my fears and my trepidations, and I'm really excited to be able to share my story, because it might not be exactly the same as your story. None of our stories are exactly the same. And but somehow we're all the same, and it's just magical what we bring to this program. When Sheila asked me to speak, my first response was, "You must be very desperate. You must have asked everybody, and they all said no." And that was truly what I thought. But you know, that's because I'm a self-centered, selfish person, and all I think about is me. And I thought that, you know, this would be, I don't know. I'm just very honored that she asked me to speak tonight. And I forgot my notes too. So farewell. I have my big book though. This is my big book, and I've got my guide. So I'm going to take a deep breath and I'm going to tell you what it was like and what happened and what I'm like now, which hasn't changed too much. I hail from a small town in Minnesota. That's where I was raised, in a Scandinavian community where food was very, very important in the community. School, church, Garrison Keillor's type place. That's where I came from. And the church dinners and, you know, all that stuff. And our family was no different. We celebrated food. You were rewarded with food if you were a good girl. And I belonged to the Clean Plate Club. My mother told me that if I was a good, I'd get something if I ate all my dinner. And so I did. You know, I was a really good little eater, especially after I had my tonsils out. And I grew up as a skinny kid. I was just an active, normal little kid, except that I never felt like I belonged. I never, ever felt like I belonged to any group of people, because my family was different from everybody else's family in my hometown. My mother was divorced. Now, that shows you how old I am, that I would have shame about that, because that is just not, you know, anything to worry about today. But in my day, it was a big deal for a woman to be divorced, and my mom and dad had owned a restaurant in our town right on Main Street, and I'd been kind of brought up in that restaurant kind of life, where there was drinking and there was lots of food, and Joanne was given quarters to put in the jukebox and dance for the farmers that came in to have a beer after dinner. And that's just the kind of upbringing that I had. I loved to entertain, and I thought that when I was on stage and when I was singing, I was safe. And so I liked to do that a lot. And that pattern for me continued really throughout my entire life, that wanting to be somebody else, acting like someone else, being on center stage, but not letting you really, really know who I am, because that was too scary. What happened in our home at night was there was lots of fighting and lots of use of alcohol. I can't call anybody an alcoholic in my family, but they didn't claim that name to fame, but there was a lot of alcoholism in our family. And I was called in the middle of the night to settle fights between my mom and dad, which gave me a whole lot of power as a six-year-old to be able to quell the fights that occurred in the middle of the night at my house. And I grew up feeling like I was different from all my friends. I didn't fit in. And yet, I could act. And I could put on a good front and could put on a good face. And my mother dressed me like I came out of a little fashion magazine. And she set me on a little chair and told me to cross my legs and be a nice little girl. Fold my hands. Don't talk. Don't get mad. Don't, you know, just behave and smile and sing when anyone wants you to sing. So I grew up with that performance edge on me, and that wanting to be someone else, and that fantasy that when I grow up, things will be different. When I grow up, I will get out of this home. When I grow up, I won't have to live with this ugliness and these people. One thing that kept me comfortable was eating, and I loved to eat. And when I got to be a teenager, eating became, you know, I started to gain weight, just normal weight, really, now that I look back on it. But at the time, everyone that I associated with went on diets, and for vacation, we went on diets to look nice for the prom or some other special occasion. And I fell right into that trap. I lost my train of thought. But I was, yes, a senior moment indeed, yeah. When I was in high school, I started using laxatives and I started bike riding furiously for miles out in the country in order to wear off the calories that I was eating. And I yo-yo dieted up and down and up and down and up and down. And yet I was slender, but I always called myself fat. My perception was different than other people's perception. I thought I was really growing bigger and bigger and bigger. My disease was taking root. It was really taking hold on me. And my disease was, first of all, bulimia. And I came into the use of laxatives and this exercising tremendously in order to get rid of the food instead of purging, as we normally call purging. And it worked for me. It worked for many, many years. It worked for me all through high school. It worked through college with the addition of diet pills. That helped in college a lot. And when I went away to college, I also was introduced to another addiction of mine, and that was alcohol. And believe me, coming from an alcoholic family, I was not going to be an alcoholic. It was very strange that this person would be attracted to alcohol. But it changed my perception. It changed my reality. It made me confident when I wasn't confident. It made me able to talk to people when I couldn't talk to people. And it provided that fantasy life that I really, really wanted. Today, I think that the reason that I became an alcoholic is because I'm a sugar addict, first and foremost. And I don't think if I had that sugar addiction, I would have become an alcoholic, given the background that I had. But I did, and I drank, and I ate, and I ate, and I ate. And drinking never kept me from eating. I ate in spite of, and I ate even more when I was drinking. And I grew and grew and grew, and by the time I was married, I was wearing my husband's, he was a very skinny man at the time, but I was wearing my husband's jeans, and I moved to Michigan from Minnesota and Iowa, where I'd grown up, to teach school. And I got involved with a group of teachers who were seeing a diet doctor there. And I got involved with diet pills one more time. And it was very scary at this time because I got pregnant and I had my son. And after he was born, I decided I was going to try the diet pills again. And this time it didn't work. I needed something stronger. And that scared me enough so that I put the diet pills down and I never went back to them. But I continued to do this yo-yo dieting, and what was most important to me in my life was to look good on the outside, was to make you think that I was okay by being thin. The thinner I was, the better I would be. And you would admire me because of the way I looked. And you wouldn't know what was going on inside me and how much I didn't fit in and how much I felt apart from you. That was my self-centeredness, I found out today. I mean, that is just the root of my disease. I have this monster inside me, which I call it. And it tells me that I'm no good, that you don't like me, that I'm not part of you, and it wants me dead. And it has come very, very close to getting me dead, which I'll get into a little bit later. When I graduated from college, and got married and moved over to Michigan and became a teacher. The next phase of my disease really took forth. I began exercising really, really excessively. I taught an aerobics dance class. This is before I quit drinking, too, which was interesting because I would do my aerobics class, then go to the liquor store, get my wine, go home, get nice and high on wine, and then binge eat. And then I would go to my class and teach my class and practice in my basement and dance my butt off so that nobody would know that you know, I was a fake. I was just an absolute fake. And along in 1985, things were getting so, so bad in my marriage and in my life from alcoholism that I was encouraged by a psychologist that I was seeing at the time, because after all, I was very, very depressed. And woe is me. You know, the world had treated me badly, and I was a victim. So I had to see a psychiatrist. And the psychologist told me that drinking was my problem. And that unless I got over drinking, I wouldn't be good to anybody. And I know this is not where you talk about drinking, but it's such part of my story that I can't not talk about it. I went to a treatment center for alcoholism in 1985, and I've been able to be blessed with sobriety since then. So I just celebrated my 25th anniversary in AA on July 1st, and I'm very, very happy that I have that. Thank you. And my husband has the same sobriety date, and our marriage was saved. And that, after that, is when the food addiction came barreling in. I mean, it just kept increasing. You know, you're all nodding. You all know what happens. My disease of bulimia became a disease of bulimia tinged with anorexia. I couldn't get thin enough. I wanted to be beautiful, and I did not want to gain weight, and I promised myself that I would never, ever, ever be fat. That was not, I just wouldn't. I would die first. And that was my mission in life. And it became such an obsession that everything I did was colored by that that thought. You can't have that, or you can have that, but then in order to do that, you've got to do this in order to get rid of it. And, you know, I planned my whole life around getting rid of the binge food that I was eating, and yet I was binging and eating more food than ever. Every single night was a binge. Every single night I went to bed stuffed. Every single morning I woke up sick. Every morning I would throw food away, saying, I'm not going to do this again today. Please, God, don't let me do this again today. Now, I'm not drinking, but I have the same pattern of behavior as a food addict as I did as an alcoholic. I went to different stores to buy my different foods because I didn't want them to notice how much ice cream I was eating, or I don't know if I'm supposed to mention food, but how much of a certain food that I was getting from one place to the next. Because I bought great quantities, and I ate them in great quantities. And I was also a gum chewer, by the way. And one time, this is kind of a side story, one time I went to Costco because I could get the packets of Carefree gum and get like 20 packs in a little case. And I would buy stacks of them. And one day the clerk said to me, are you taking this to a flea market to sell? I said, no, I'm just stocking up. Yeah, I was always just stocking up, or maybe stocking up for a party or something. Party of gum. I don't know. Anyway, where was I? My story. Yeah. Tell me where I was. I was at Costco. All right. Different stores. Yep, I was in different stores buying food. And every night was the same. And this went on for year after year after year. And I hated myself more and more and more. I could not understand why I was able to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, these 12 steps, and I was able to stay sober, and I had celebrated my 14th anniversary of sobriety, but I was a wreck. I felt like the biggest phony in the world. Everybody told me that if I had a problem with food, I must be kidding, you know, because I didn't look like I had a problem with food. I didn't let anybody see me eat. I didn't eat during the day. If I went to school and taught school for the day, I didn't eat breakfast at school. I didn't eat lunch at school. I didn't participate in the luncheons, unless I could participate in a luncheon if I promised myself I wouldn't eat dinner that night. So, you know, food was just a game. I could allow myself one little tiny meal a day, and then I'd save up for the big binge at night because I deserved to have that comfort. It was my absolute only comfort in life. I remember one night when I was sitting on the couch in Irvine. This is when we lived back here in Orange County. And I was sitting on a couch with my spread all around me and my towel around my neck over my bathrobe, watching TV. And my husband said, "Oh, I'm going to go to bed now." And I said, "Okay, bye." And I said, "Well, why are you going to bed so early?" And he says, "You don't care. All you care about is your food." And that stung, that really, really stung. And I knew he was right, but I couldn't help it. I absolutely couldn't help it. On my 14th AA anniversary, I was taking my chip, and I was doing a little acceptance speech, and I was very excited about getting my sobriety date of 14 years. And I said, "Thank you very much. I'm really honored by this, but I'm sorry. I've got another problem, and I'm really ashamed to bring this up at an AA meeting, but I really have to do it. I have a problem with food, and I can't stop eating, and my goal in this next year is to find help." And that's all I said. And lo and behold, there was a couple, a man and his wife, sitting out in that audience who came from CEA Howe. And they rustled me over in the parking lot afterwards, and they told me about Compulsive Eaters Anonymous Howe. And I said, "I've never heard of it, and I never had. You know, I'd heard of the sister program or the mother program, but I had never heard of Compulsive Eaters Anonymous Howe." And I liked the ring of it because that's what I was. I wasn't an overeater. I wasn't overweight particularly. I mean, I wasn't huge. I wasn't, obese, and people couldn't tell by looking at me that I had a problem with food. But I knew I had a problem with food, and it was devastating my life. I was powerless. I could not stop eating. The only way I could stop eating is not to eat anything during the day. To starve myself. So I came to this program right away, and I came to my first meeting up in Costa Mesa on a Wednesday night, and it was full of people, and I picked a sponsor, the lady that was sitting right next to me. She only had 30 days of abstinence, and she volunteered to sponsor me. I was her very first sponsee. And she took me under her wing, and she gave me lots of recipes, and she gave me lots of love, and she told me it would be okay. And I absolutely hated the measuring. I hated all this food stuff. I mean, I had to eat 3 meals a day. That was just, it was unbelievable. But the first day that I sat down to breakfast and eating a weighed and measured meal, I wept because I knew that this was all I got. I knew that fear of just continuing all day long, I wouldn't have to worry about it, that I had a boundary, that I had something safe in that scale and in that measuring cup and in those spoons. And I was able to get through that first meal. And then I had to wrestle around and get the vegetables cut and do all this stuff to get ready for lunch. And before I knew it was lunchtime, I had to eat again. It was really, you know, quite an adjustment from not eating all day. I mean, I had lots more time when I wasn't eating. But then I got through lunch, and then before I knew it was time to eat again at dinner time. And I'd gotten through 24 hours, or almost 24 hours, of not being able to, of not compulsively eating. And yet I was eating three meals. It was a miracle. I thought that I could not get through a day without stopping eating once I started, was actually able to eat three meals a day and stop after they were finished, get to the next meal, and survive. And I lost weight very quickly. I lost about 15 to 20 pounds in the first 30 days. And my sponsor at the time said, "Joanne, you're losing weight way too fast. You got to slow down here." And I said, no, not me. No, I'm fine. And to tell you the truth today, I'd never been at a lower weight. But I didn't let anybody know that. Nobody had to know that. No one in Seahaw had to know that this was Joanne's lowest weight. And the disease progressed. And it flipped over into more anorexic type behavior. And I started playing around with the food, the food plan eventually. I went on for about the first 5 years really, really doing well. Maintained this very, very low weight. My sponsor didn't bug me anymore. She had put me right on maintenance, and after a little bit of resistance to going on maintenance, I agreed to do it. But I would sometimes not eat the grains. Sometimes I would not eat the fat. And I wouldn't tell the truth. So, you know, I cheated myself. I ate what I committed to eat, but I ate as little as I could. I ate as little bit as I could from that food plan, the minimum. You know, it said you can have like 4 slices of Ezekiel bread at maintenance. I wouldn't think of it. I wouldn't hear of it. And along about 6 years, my metabolism started changing. I didn't know it was wrong. All I knew is that I started getting bumpy around the middle. My stomach started feeling puffy. I started a lot of fluid retention. Very uncomfortable. Anything that I ate just seemed to blow me up. And yet I would restrict and take more away from my food plan and tell my sponsor, "Well, I'm having a hard time maintaining my weight, so I've gotta take out something." And by the time I got done, I was eating no grains or just very, you know, like 1 grain a day. And I was eating very little fat. And and it was sad. And I wasn't feeling well. I felt weak. I had switched from my heavy exercise to yoga. And today I was talking to somebody and I said, "I used to be in competitive yoga." Because that's the kind of person I was. I was a competitor. I went to this beautiful, serene place for yoga class, And I had to be the best headstand. I had to be the best 6-year-old that can get on her head in the class. I had to be able to do this deep back bend. And I had to be able to, curl up like a pretzel. I really wasn't that good. But I thought I was, and I really tried, and I was one of the oldest people in class that could do some of these poses. So I thought I was pretty neat. But it was destroying my body. I was hurting. I got to the point where I had to quit yoga a year ago. And this is after my miracle story. Well, that was part one of my recovery. Part one is the fact that I had gotten to see how I was eating 3 meals a day, weighed and measured, with nothing in between except sugar-free soda, no calorie beverages. I had given up sugar-free gum on my 59th day at Fred S.'s retreat down in near San Diego, right, in 1999. And so I was sugar-free, and I really felt like I was doing the program the very best that I could. And I was thin, never had been thinner. People started questioning my thinness, and since I wasn't feeling very well anyway, and then I started puffing out and feeling uncomfortable, I thought, well, maybe it's time to see a nutritionist, because several of my friends had been going to nutritionists at the time. So I went to a nutritionist, and she said, well, you're an anorexic weight. You're at an anorexic weight. Nobody had ever said those words to me. And it was like a slap across the face. It was like the first time somebody told me you're an alcoholic. And I knew she was right, and I knew that I was in trouble, and I knew I was hooked to being thin. She made me agree that I would be willing to gain weight. I really, really didn't want to. She made me eat these protein and drink these protein shakes. She made me eat several times a day. And I did it, but I did it resentfully, and I hated her guts for making me do this. And really the only reason I stuck with it is because I had some friends that were doing the same thing, and I wanted to be part of. She would weigh me, she would measure me, she'd find out all the cellular composition in my body and all this stuff. And I started getting healthier and healthier and healthier, and I started feeling well. Now, what does my sponsor have to do with all this? My sponsor, at the time, was all for it. When I told her that I was, this is my third sponsor, by the way, too, and she told me that she supported this medical abstinence, that she was totally for it, that I should do whatever this doctor told me to do, and that was going to be my new abstinence. So I did it, and then 2 years later, in 2008, my husband and I moved back from California back to Michigan to be with our son and daughter-in-law and our grandkids who live back there. And that was a rather traumatic move for me. I thought it was going to be easy, and I was really looking forward to it, but once I got back there, it wasn't about the weather. It was about the people that I missed here. I missed my meetings tremendously. I was so, so unhappy living without my meetings and without you people in Seahaw that I really thought I was going to die, and I kind of wanted to. And I allowed my body to lose more weight. I swear to you, I was eating exactly the same amount of food that nutritionist told me to eat every day, but somehow my spirit and my body were dying. I don't know how to explain that. I just know that was what was happening to me. And I would make phone calls, and I would say, I feel like I'm dying. I feel like I'm going away from the world. And you would just love me and love me and love me and tell me that someday it was going to be okay, that God had a reason for this. God had a purpose for this. I was desperate, and one day I was really desperate, and I was listening to this 7 o'clock in the morning CHOW meeting, and I found these bridge meetings on the telephone, and I listened to them faithfully, and I felt like I wasn't a part of. I just kind of listened. Didn't feel like I fit in there either, because everybody knew each other on the bridge meeting. But I heard this one girl who would talk every once in a while, and she'd say, "I'm so-and-so, and I'm an anorexic willing to gain weight." And the eyes of my heart started to open. God opened my eyes and really helped me to see what was really going on with me. And for the first time in 50 years, Joanne actually saw her disease for what it really was. Anorexia. Big A. And I decided that I needed to get some help, and I through a long story of talking to people, I connected somehow in my other program with a woman who was an anorexic and who had been in treatment and who knew of a great team of doctors in the Detroit area nearby, not too far from where I lived. I got the name of that psychologist the next day. I called her, made an appointment, and I said, "I'm done. I can't do this anymore." Now, she's used to treating anorexics that are young ladies, young teenagers mostly. And I think it scared her to have someone my age come in and say, "I don't want to do this anymore. I can't take it. It's killing me." And I had so much willingness, because my God had brought me to that place of willingness that we all have to come to some sooner or later. And I surrendered. That was in December of 2008. That winter, after I surrendered to her, I was willing to gain weight. I started on the medical abstinence food plan given to me by my doctor, supported by my sponsor, and I started to gain weight. But I started to feel so much better. My body was, I just felt like I was drinking up nourishment that I had robbed myself of for years. I know that what I've done to my body, I'm having some lasting effects, because I did this for almost 50 years. And my bones, I have osteoporosis. My bones and my joints are very sore and achy a lot of the time these days. My brain doesn't work as well as it used to, and I don't think it's just because I'm getting older. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I damage some brain cells by not feeding my brain properly. I was told the brain needs to have, and all the other organs of the body, all the muscles of the body, have to have fat. They have to have grain. They have to have all these different nutrition things that we have. And our food plan has a lot of good things to offer. But I needed just more of what it had to offer. I just needed to eat more. So that was what my food plan was about. And I have followed that food plan. I cried and whined about this body that God has given me. I don't like being this size. I liked being skinny, really skinny. And I, last summer I was quite unhappy when I was here. I remember when Ray said, "You got a booty." She teased me about having a booty. And there was a part of me that felt that terrible old shame again. But my mission, you know, now is to really have that freedom from bondage of self. And that's really what I came here to talk tonight about, is freedom from bondage of self. How do I get that freedom? I have to let go. I have to let God into my life to do with me whatever He will. This morning, or this week, I've had a tremendously intense experience because this fear, this itch of mine, has really loomed close and wanted to set me apart from you. It wanted to say, you can't be a butt speaker. You have no right to stand up in front of those people. There are people in here that have lost 150 pounds, 200 pounds. There are people in here that are funny. There are people in here who are bright and articulate and who have so much to offer. What on earth are you doing up in front of that audience? And I wept and I ranted and waved to my roommate. And I called people. In fact, this morning I called one of my friends. I think she's in the Kansas City area. She is in the Kansas City area. And I said, I just need someone calm that I can just talk to. And she said, spill the beans. So I told her how I was feeling. And she said, may I speak? And I said, yes, and I'd like to hear a lecture. I don't care what you have to say to me. I just need to hear anything. And she gave me her lecture about God's surgery. She said, this is the seventh step happening, and you're awake, and you're alive to feel it. Imagine having surgery and not being under anesthesia. She said, that is what you're experiencing now, and it's good. This is good. I had to really think about that. Now, here I was in pain and feeling uncomfortable about having this opportunity to share with you. I was being frightened and scared by my disease. And at the same time, God was taking that from me. And somehow today, my spirit has lifted. God has been with me all day long. And I'm really, really sure that God will never, ever let me down. And whether I am a articulate speaker or not is not the point. The point is that I was given an opportunity to tell my story, and I can tell my truth. I'm so, so glad to be free, a little bit freer than I was this morning. And that's what the process is about, you know. I don't get all free at once. I get free from doing service. I get free from sponsoring. And it says in here, in the big book, on page 550, see how it's taught me that I will have peace of mind in exact proportion to the peace of mind I bring to the lives of other people. And so I'm trying today to think about other people more and myself less. I'm trying to say yes when I really want to run away and say no. It's a privilege. It's just all a privilege. On 552 of the story, Freedom from Bondage, in our book, this is the same page as the resentment prayer. You know, you probably all are familiar with 552. But if you're not, and you're a newcomer, you will be. But at the bottom of that page, the last paragraph, it says, this great experience that released me from the bondage of hatred and replaced it with love is really just another affirmation of the truth I know. I get everything I need in CEA Howe, Compulsive Eaters Anonymous. And everything I need, I get. And when I get what I need, I invariably find that it was just what I wanted all the time. So with that, I'm going to close and thank you for having me tonight, Sheila. Thank you for being here. Thank you for loving me while I'm going through the process of learning how to love myself. And let's make this a happy, joyous, and very free weekend. I hope God bless every single one of us. Thank you.